about online?
You can check out everything that we're up to at blackfutureslab.org. You can take the census at blackcensus.org, and you can follow us on social media at Black Futures Lab and Black, the number two, the future action.
And we'll post links again to those. Thank you so much, Alicia, for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Alicia Garza, political strategist, organizer, author of the book, The Purpose of Power, How We Come Together When We Fall Apart, and founder and principal at Black to the Future Action Fund and Black Futures Lab, and co-founder of the hashtag Black Lives Matter. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcasts on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Bus is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our
website. Hey, this is Cliving. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are tuned into Civic Cypher.
Yes, sir. And we got a lot for you to stick around for. We had an interesting Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Junior. And we realized that a lot of people really don't know the man that we, to be fair, had to come to know and study. And this version of him that has been whitewashed and romanticized is in some ways a far cry from the actual man that lived. This guy was prolific, and you know, it's almost like he's reduced every holiday to just his I Have a Dream speech and a couple of choice quotes that,
yeah,
really
they've kind of put him in a category with Santa Claus.
Right, and that's not really fair. So we're going to take some time and really flesh out a little bit more of Dr. King, what he stood for, and we're going to do that a little later in the show by reading his letter from a Birmingham jail, which is a really profound letter. We can't read it all, but certainly want to share some parts of it with you and give you a little bit more depth on the man that was Dr. King and all that he stood for. Also, we're going to take some time and point out the hypocrisy found most prominently in the GOP in this country when it comes to Dr. King's holiday, where, again, they take little bits and pieces of his life and kind of throw a quote up here and there for clout, but they in no way stand for anything that Dr. King stood for. So it's up to us to point that out and to teach what we know. But first and foremost, we're going to start off on a high, as we do, with some Ebony Excellence. Q.
Shall we?
Shall. This week's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media and brought to you, the source material, rather, is NPR.org. Shout out to NPR. I'm always going to love those guys. Anyway, we are going to pay particular attention to Black Panther Wakanda Forever. This is our example of Ebony Excellence this week because the movie, not only did it do well in the box office, but it's done well critically, and it actually earned 12 NAACP Image Awards nominations, with The Woman King and Abbott Elementary also earning top nominations. But the sequel, which is where the Marvel film delved into the concept of Wakanda's grief in the wake of the death of T'Challa, a character played by Chadwick Boseman, who died in 2020, went on to create so much of a cultural impact and so much of a cultural moment, obviously bringing stars like Angela Bassett to the forefront, as well as you know, many other people that worked on the film, like behind the scenes. And then, of course, we can't say enough about the director, Ryan Coogler. But the fact is that, you know, in all the nominees have conveyed a wide range of authentic stories and diverse experiences that have resonated with many in the Black community. And this comes from Derek Johnson, the president and CEO of the NAACP. And he says, "We're proud to recognize their outstanding achievements and performances. But, you know, leading the way, of course, Wakanda Forever, Black Panther with 12 NAACP Image Awards is just a remarkable feat and definitely Ebony Excellence." Now,
hopefully they get a bunch of wins.
That's what we're hoping. Now, how did you spend your MLK holiday, Q?
At work.
Well, I happen to know that you didn't just work. Unfortunately, you did have to work. I get that. But we also had to work in this space as we do and kind of share a little bit more stories and give a little bit more insight. And
I don't think we can call what we did after work work. Not this time.
Well, it was kind of in the same spirit as work, but that was a little bit more fun. Admittedly, we got a chance to sit down and interview with a good friend of ours. But we definitely did fellowship in the name of Dr. King and for that reason on that day. But also one of the things that we did, you know, with the time off, you know, whatever, you get a chance to kind of check in with social media. You get a chance to tap in with people you haven't heard from in a while. And of course, you know, with Q and I working in this space, you know, folks think of us, you know, being in the space where we're trying to kind of create a more equitable world along racial lines. And, you know, for some of our friends and people that we're connected with, we're top of mind. And so things get sent our way. I want to take a moment and shout out an Instagram handle, Live Love Liberate. She's a good friend of mine and a good friend of the show. And she managed to compile a bunch of stuff that really illustrates the delusion that has found its way in recent years to right-wing social media platforms, certainly right-wing political platforms, and in no way represent the reality of what Dr. King stood for. And it feels a little bit insulting that they would take Dr. King's words, stand on them, at least in a digital space, saying that this was a great man and these things that he said were so profound and we're glad that the country has reached this level and so forth and so on. And then the other 364 days of the year actively work against what, not only what he would wrote in his letters and his gave in his sermons, but even in the I Have a Dream speech, which is in and of itself picked apart and used oftentimes out of context by these folks. And it's up to us to kind of set the record straight. You know, the hypocrisy, we do
blatant.
Thank you.
Hypocrisy.
We point out a lot of hypocrisy and in all, you know, political arenas, but not enough can be said about the extreme hypocrisy that we find in, you know, conservative circles. It's it's the strangest thing. It's like watching crazy people, but there's so many crazy people sharing that delusion that you can't convince them that they're crazy, right? But I will read to you exactly what made its way to us, and we'll discuss. And you can see, you know, and decide for yourself if in fact this is crazy, this is a delusion. So let's start. One of the things, and this was just a meme that was sent along that I thought was kind of important for us, you know, getting into this subject matter right now. The meme was a child holding a poster, and the poster says, "Stop using MLK as an example of a peaceful protest. You shot him too." That's heavy, right? Yeah, right. There's nothing you can do that's good enough, right? And we're going to get a little bit more into that when we get into the letter from a Birmingham jail for our Way Black History Fact. But yeah, you know, Dr. King was certainly one of those people that had to push back against folks, you know, of the cloth, you know, ministers and pastors and preachers pushing back on him, telling him that he should not protest in a nonviolent way. Right. And bear in mind that his approval rating, again, was 20% when he was alive. 20%. Now everybody looks back and is like, oh, Dr. King, you know. But when he was alive, 80% of the people disapproved of him, his methods, what he stood for, his face, whatever. You know, people just didn't like him. And that's something that this country loves to forget. I don't forget that. All right. First up, Rand Paul. Okay. So Rand Paul is, you know, again, a conservative politician.
Rand Paul quoting Dr. King on anything is laughable.
Isn't that crazy? So here's it looks like a tweet from Rand Paul. It says, "As we honor MLK today, may his courage inspire us to redouble our commitment to working together for change. Let's commemorate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. by uniting the two Americas into one, an America that includes just ... Okay, so this is, you know, the tweet. You get the idea, you get the gist of it. And then in the screen cap that was sent to me, there's an article, and the headline says, "How Rand Paul blocked the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill while the nation mourned George Floyd." So this man talking about commemorating the life of Dr. King, uniting the two Americas, so forth and so on, it feels like, you know, what it takes to unite the two Americas is to recognize that the two Americas have different views, have different concerns and different realities, right? This is something that I'm sure every politician can understand. But when you fail to account for one of those facets, one of those elements, halves, it seems less like I want to work together and more like I want to seize more power and subject you to my reality.
And I need you to be okay with that.
Right. Thank you. Who in the world would block the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill while the nation was mourning George Floyd? I mean, we don't even need the second part. Who would block an anti-lynching bill, period? And see, it's these things that feel so hurtful. And it's like everybody's just ignores this and keeps voting for these guys. And that's...
Go ahead. I think you are providing too much grace.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I do not think that all the people that vote for this man are ignoring that.
Yeah,
that's what they want. That's why they're voting.
Sure, I'll give you that. But so if that is true, then why pull a quote and post it on your social media, Rand Paul?
Because even racist, bigoted, despicable people don't want you to think that of them.
Isn't that crazy?
Racist people don't even like being called racist while doing racist things.
Mm. Hey, when you're right, you're right, man. But you know, the craziest part about this is that it feels like there's like, to a person like me, why would you quote Dr. King? Why not quote, you know, Robert E. Lee, you know, or one of your like real heroes, you know, people that would also be opposed to the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill, right? Since this, you know, your voting record shows me where your values are. Why not, you know, quote a person like that? Why even celebrate Dr. King's Day? And it feels like they want to get some of that Dr. King clout. Now that they've whitewashed the legacy, they want to cash in on it, mm-hmm. right? So I think that what you're saying is absolutely right, just adding a couple of layers or a little bit more seasoning to it. But yeah, man, this is the strangest thing. I've never seen anything like it. All right, let's go on. Ron DeSantis. Here's another name. He's the guy from...
Is that Governor Ron DeSantis?
Indeed, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. So suffice it to say, he just, you know, copied a, you know, a meme or a screen, you know, a photo of Dr. King standing next to a cutout of his I Have a Dream speech, right? The text, right? And then above the photo, he put Happy MLK Day with an exclamation point. And the, you know, the cutout is the, you know, I have a dream that one day, every valley shall be exalted, every hill and every mountain shall, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Right. And the person that grabbed this entire, screen grab and sent it over to me, responded to Ron DeSantis saying, pretty close to that horrible CRT, like that's Black history right there. You sure that's what you want to do? And for those that don't know, this guy Ron DeSantis has been perhaps the biggest and most vocal opponent of CRT, or in fact American history, teaching American history in schools, right? Based off of nothing, based off of some imaginary boogeyman, kids are going to be sad and not, you know, love the country and feel bad about themselves or whatever, which in my estimation is complete and utter nonsense. It feels very unfair, and it feels like another whitewashing of history. And it's dangerous, but it's particularly hurtful when this person who does not want us as a country to look back, certainly doesn't want our children to look back, will readily pull from Black history when it keeps him slightly, I mean, in terms of the optics, mm-hmm. looking slightly less racist than he absolutely is, right? And again, these are things that you need to know. Not everybody that, you know, quotes the Bible is, you know, going to heaven. You know, I'm sure there's some sort of anecdote.
Or even a believer. Sure, in what sure. Quoting.
There's some sort of anecdote that I've heard growing up. I come from a mm-hmm. Christian tradition in my house. And so mm-hmm. there are these little things that we pass around back and forth. But, you know, the same seems to be true here with the, in the political arena with respect to Dr. King. Here's a funny one. The actual @GOP social media handle, which is, I'm assuming, the handle for the entirety of the political party known as Republicans in this country. They just put a post that says Happy Martin Luther King Day. And this is just sort of funny because the person also responded with a clippy the clip art. And it says, hi, it looks like you're quoting Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to try to hide the fact that you give comfort to racists. Would you like some help logging out forever?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. But, you know, that one doesn't have as much, you know, teeth in it, from a journalistic standpoint, but it's just sort of something that's a little bit funny. Let's go to Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz has a post that, and we realize this was from last weekend, but we had to talk about this because if we don't point out these hypocrisies, then you may associate these backwards political leaders on the right with an actual American hero who probably would be more left than everybody that even I know. And I'm way over there on the left, man. But, you know, Ted Cruz, he put a post that says, today we honor the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Pretty standard. And then there's like a photo of Dr. King and, you know, everything like that. And then there's a picture of him interrogating or interviewing, whatever you want to call it, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. And he's holding up the children's book. You remember that scene on the floor where the children's book was like basically an educational book for children about race and so forth. And so, again, Dr. King was certainly about educating, certainly about togetherness, fellowship, so forth. We need to understand each other. We need to support each other, help each other. And then Ted Cruz, almost everything that he's done in this space has been, if Dr. King were still alive, Ted Cruz would, based on his track record, would stand in opposition to almost everything Dr. King stood for.
Almost everything.
And so again, just pulling a little bit of political, they reworked the image of Dr. King because he wasn't Malcolm X. They reworked him, made him a little bit more, you know, friendly, like you said, made him into basically Santa Claus, and then took him for themselves. And it feels like, wait, you know, and we've seen this happen with music, with rock and roll, with, you know, we've seen it happen time and again with all bits and pieces of our culture. It's taken from us, it's whitewashed and repackaged, you know, for a white audience. But to see this happen with Dr. King, someone who in many ways is a moral guidepost for not just Black people, but for this entire country, to have his legacy and his story be co-opted, his words be co-opted and used in these circles where the source of the hatred that we're dealing with, the source of the conflicts, I mean, we can't figure this gun stuff out, we can't figure none of this stuff out. And often enough, it's those people on that side of the aisle that are standing in the way. And as you mentioned,
very intentionally,
out loud, not hiding it. They wide open. And then all of a sudden, Dr. King's, you know, holiday comes around and everybody's like, oh yeah, kumbaya. And then the day after, they get right back to it. All right, let me continue. Here's another name you know. Mitch McConnell says, today we honor an American hero, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His dream of equal justice and abundant opportunity inspired our nation to make historic progress and continue to make us better to this day. And this quote was superimposed.
Are people serious?
This quote that this tweet rather from Mitch McConnell is packaged, as it was sent to me, it was packaged with a photo of Mitch McConnell receiving an award, standing in front of a gigantic Confederate flag, and he's old as dirt. So he's basically the same age as he is now. So clearly, this person wants the image of Dr. King, but Dr. King was really about, you know, togetherness. And Mitch McConnell just used his words, but, you know, standing in front of that flag, you'd be hard pressed to make a case that that's what you're really on.
It's like they've gone out of their way to make Dr. King benign.
Yeah.
Toothless.
Mm-hmm.
Soft, a word that you often use to remind people that you aren't.
So ain't.
They want him to be perceived that way. So it's not just whitewashing, but making him harmless, right? In many ways, it can't be perceived that he was at one point opposed to and by the government.
Oh yeah,
right. So now that his approval rating is 100, and the most romanticized parts of the dream speech, because the "I Have a Dream" speech in and of itself is not even all kumbaya. But packaged that way, very intentionally, to take out this really, really sweet, really, really warm part, make it very, very Hallmark, make him very, very animated, make him very, very much a character.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And like I said, a benign, harmless, toothless, warm, soft character when he was at his core the opposite of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And more selflessly for us probably than anyone ever.
Yeah, how about that?
Like his rap sheet with regards to the causes that helped us long and impenetrable.
Yeah.
That part of his legacy cannot be tarnished or questioned. For real, willing to sacrifice it all, as he ultimately did,
yeah,
for all of us, and not just skin folk.
Yeah, yeah. And this is another thing that we need to share with you. You know, for those that don't know, when Dr. King was assassinated, it was because he had gone to Tennessee to work with poor people. You know, he was trying to get, you know, workers' rights, labor rights, you know, fair compensation, et cetera. Issues that we're still dealing with in this country today. Issues that, you know, the Republican Party would stand opposed to, as they have done for the past couple of years. And, you know, once he turned that corner, you know, once it wasn't about, hey, can we use the same bathroom or drink from the same water fountain or sit at the same lunch counter? Once it was like, hey, you're coming after, you know, our war, coming after, you know, our money, or, you know, creating cohesion between poor people and poor whites and poor blacks, you know, then it became, okay, well, this guy has got too much power. Once his approval rating started to tick upward, because he's now reaching into new communities and identifying commonalities, then it becomes more problematic. So, you know, this list goes on, Lauren Boebert and whoever else the rest of these people are, more of the same. I'll spare you the details, but I do want to leave you with this. Here's a tweet from Bernice King, which is Dr. King's daughter. She says, if you're going to quote and authentically honor my father on MLK Day, commit to embracing a world house perspective. Determine how you'll disrupt unjust systems and thinking with nonviolent strategy, which that was Dr. King. That was what he was about, nonviolence. And that's what they took. They preferred him to Stokely and to, you know,
Malcolm
and James Baldwin, everyone else. Dr. King was a minister, and, you know, anyway, I'll continue. Support policies that reflect higher consciousness and make no excuses for hate. So this comes directly from his daughter. This is what you need to do on Dr. King's birthday. And unfortunately, we have not seen that from our conservative branch.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. And here we are again, bro.
Yes, indeed. Back at it. Stick around. We got a lot more to cover on the show. We are going to be talking about something that has made its way to the news. We haven't done one of these in a long time, not because it hasn't been there, but we're going to talk about another video where a black man had an interaction with the police, and that black man is no longer alive, despite the police not really being in any danger. Well, not being in any danger, period.
Yeah, not any at all.
And not even the threat of it. And somehow, you know, there's more life lost. We're also going to talk about the letter from a Birmingham jail, which is one of the one of my favorite writings from Dr. King. And so much more. But first and foremost, we're going to discuss BABA, how to become a better ally. Baba. Today's Baba is sponsored by Major Threads. For all the finest in sportswear, check out majorthreads.com. Today's Baba, South Carolina HBCU receives $90,000 grant to get more black male teachers in the classrooms. Now, you might be saying to yourself, $90,000 is a lot of money. I don't have that much money to donate. Well, listen, I've been learning recently that historically black colleges and universities need money. This is something that I would not have known because I did not go to an HBCU, unfortunately. But I've come to appreciate their place in the world and their place in this country in particular. There are certain things that are just never going to be taught. They're not valuable enough historically, or the lessons or anything like that, to be taught in you know, your normal schools, you know, certainly not public schools and public universities, but historically Black colleges and universities will certainly tell these stories. And again, very necessary, but I'll read a bit. South Carolina State University, an HBCU, historically Black college and university in Orangeburg, South Carolina, received a $90,000 grant for its Call Me Mister program to extend its efforts in placing more Black male teachers in the classroom. ABC Columbia reported that the HBCU received the funds on Monday from the Leveraging Innovation for Educator Excellence to help recruit and train Black male teachers. According to Dr. Thelma Sojourner, Program Director for Life 2, an initiative devoted to boosting teacher efficacy, less than 2% of the instructors currently teaching in the South Carolina schools are identified as Black men. There is tremendous need for children to see young men coming in and working in the schools, said Sojourner. So if you can, donate to an HBCU because they're on the right track and they know exactly what we need. Now, speaking of Black male teachers. Kenan Anderson was a younger than me man, and he was tased to death by the police and what we have to call an incident of police violence. Normally one or the other of us will watch a video that involves someone's life coming to an end so that we don't have to experience every single trauma that we come across that people send our way every video. But this one, we both had to take a moment and really process this. Right, we had to look at this video. And if I'm honest, the video left me with more questions than answers, which I think is probably par for the course. Typically, we don't watch videos and be like, oh, well, you know, that's that. Usually we're like, why or whatever. But this one certainly had that effect on me, and just very disturbing, especially when you know going into it that you're looking at a person that's not alive anymore. There's just something that's deeply troubling and unsettling about that. Let me read a bit to you. So this comes from Yahoo News. Chilling video shows cops repeatedly tase cousin of BLM co-founder before his death. Shocking video footage shows a fleeing Kenan Anderson, a high school teacher whose cousin is Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Cullors, beg for his life as cops repeatedly tased him several hours before his death. When he died, Anderson, who at least one bystander claimed had tried to steal a car, became the third man of color to perish after a violent encounter with the LAPD in the span of a week. The department's own chief took the unusual step of quickly suggesting at least one of the fatalities could have been avoided. When the family watched the video prior to its public release, some viewed it in the police station itself. Others watched at home and over FaceTime, Cullors told the Daily Beast. She described her family's initial reaction as devastated and disgusted. And here's a quote from his brother, Chris, just being like, how did they do that to him? How did this end up leading to his death? To his sister saying that was too much. To his auntie, my cousin, just crying uncontrollably, Cullors told the Daily Beast. Like, it's so traumatic, I can't unsee that, she said. No one deserves to die begging for their life. Okay, so I'll just read this next part. Body camera footage shows Anderson, 31, repeatedly yelled, they're trying to George Floyd me, as cops restrained him in the middle of the street on January 3rd. One officer held his elbow on Anderson's neck as he was pinned to the ground. Simultaneously, after police issued a slew of warnings, another officer appeared to tase Anderson for nearly 30 seconds straight. So let's talk about the video. What we saw. We saw this man, Kenan Anderson, get approached. He was approached by a motorcycle officer, if I'm not mistaken.
I wish there would have been some 10 seconds of footage before that, because it kind of It's like we joined the story in the middle.
In the middle, right. Yeah. So that was a little strange. But, you know, basically there's an officer that is approaching him and he's like walking to a corner. And, you know, he says, hey, you know, they're trying to kill me. And he walks to a corner, he puts his hands up, that sort of thing. And the officer says, you know, stay there, whatever. And then Kenan says back to the officer, hey, look, I don't want to go into this corner. Let me come out in the street where people can see me. And the officer kind of, you know, says, you know, okay, cool, you know, do your thing, whatever. But I need you to calm down. I need you to stay right here, you know, put your hands up, that sort of thing. We have to describe these to you because we need to paint the picture, but obviously I'm not going to get it 100% right. And I don't want to ask you to go and watch somebody get executed, but you know, if you need it to be 100% accurate, then obviously the video is available online. But if not, you know, I'm going to give it to you the best way that I remember it. All right. So, as he's, you know, now kind of going back to the street, off of the corner, he's still kind of going back and forth with the officer. And you start to get the sense that, well, I mean, okay, so Q, you mentioned something while you said he wasn't really in his right mind. You got that sense, right?
Neither of us are professionals in any type of clinical psychology or sociology.
Sure.
We're not practitioners of medicine, mental, physical. Like, this is just an observation. He didn't seem to be all there. It could just be because he was terrified. It could be because of whatever happened that caused the police to arrive in the first place. It could be because he has mental health issues. It could be because reasons that we don't know.
And never will know.
Right? But his interaction was not, it didn't seem normal.
It didn't seem like a reasonable person.
He didn't react in a way that someone might reasonably react. However, if you look like him, and you're being approached by police and you understand that just those two factors might lead to your death,
yeah,
then who are we to say that he should have reacted in any way that's considered quote unquote normal?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot to deal with. He then starts to kind of do a light jog. Maybe he didn't run. And he was walking and kind of like moving quickly, putting some distance between himself and the officer.
Well, we could say that he ran, just not very fast or far.
Sure. I'd go with that.
Yeah. And I'm using the word run because Ramses and I have to always make sure that we're not coloring a picture in a
way
to extra victimize or.
Yeah, we don't want to make anybody the bad guy.
Someone or make anybody else the bad guy. So I have to make sure that we're as objective as we can
be. I'd go with that.
He did do what some people might describe as running.
Okay.
He just didn't go very fast or very far, and that seemed intentional.
Right. He wasn't.
This was not based on.
It wasn't a panic run. Yeah, it wasn't an escape run. It was
more than survival.
Right. He was just putting some distance. So yeah, I'm glad you said that. And the officer, of course, starts yelling. And then officer's like, okay, he's a little far away. Let me hop back on my bike, jumps on his motorcycle, and then starts to pursue him a little bit more. And he wasn't running down the sidewalk. He was running into the middle of the street where the cars were. So again, you're seeing a person not behave in a way that you would deem as, and you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Now we know he's a teacher, an educator. So looking at that, you know, a person, this isn't a person who's homeless, a person who is, you know, that you would associate, you know, those types of mental conditions with, you know, just kind of out there, spaced out. And so his behavior is very, very obviously off. You know, you wouldn't run into the street, or I guess run is such a hard, it's because he was just kind of, again,
Use the word running.
He was running not fast and not far
into the cars, not just into the street, but like into the most congested part of traffic.
And when the officer asked him to stop again, he stopped. He started to kind of get down on the ground. And it's almost like he's making sense of what's happening around him. At no point did it seem like he was trying to flee. He was just trying to from where I sit, looked like he was trying to position himself in a way to where he probably would have the most insulation from the sort of harm that might be coming his way. Best I can guess. And then after that, you know, the police start to jump on him, and you know, that's when you get the elbow to the neck thing, and he starts restating, they're trying to kill me. Now it seems a little bit more like it's about the officers rather than whatever it was he was running from when the first officer pulled up. And then he says, you know, they're trying to George Floyd me. And you can kind of hear him kind of yelling and wailing. And, you know, now you're getting the stop resisting and all that sort of stuff, you know, turn over on your side, you know, this sort of stuff. And again, we've talked about this many times on the show. It's very difficult to do too much of anything that someone's asking you to do when, you know, there's, you know, five grown men with their full weight on different parts of your body. It's hard to comply. It's hard to turn over. You know what I'm saying? That's just, it literally is impossible to do that for most people. You know, that strength doesn't exist. I cannot turn over if the weight of another human being is on top of me. It's just, especially if I'm lying flat on the sidewalk. Anyway, you know, they're telling him all this stuff, you know, as the police do. I've kind of come to the conclusion that once the police say stop resisting, that you're pretty much going to die. You know, there's no way that you can, once they say it out loud, it's like they've claimed that you've been resisting, and then everything after that is just more of the same.
And in most cases, when they're saying that, weapons have already been drawn that they've determined they now have to use.
Right. Now that's been introduced. It needs to be discharged in order to justify pulling it out in the first place. Who knows? And, you know, we talk about this every week. I don't want to be unfair, but, you know, we see the same things. And it's like, why is there not a better system here? Notice in this story, we haven't talked about a weapon. He didn't brandish a gun. He didn't do anything like that, right? He's on the ground. The officer. Good.
Not to cut you off, but another reason why it's important for us to even say he ran. Okay. Say he was running as fast as he could, as far as he could. So then we should kill him. Right. Like, we don't have to like have let's get the audience to forgive him for running away. Like, no, even if his full intent was escape,
just to bounce.
Oh, I'm out. The police are here. I'm
outro.
Out.
Yeah.
And I used to run track. I'm out.
Nothing could
even
stop
if
me.
It's I'm even if it's up. That. Right.
Yeah.
He dies for that.
So here's the part.
Because the officers seem to get, and this is important too,
good.
Angry at how dare you not do
exactly what I say when I say it. Yeah.
It doesn't matter why we're here or that maybe you didn't do anything. Do what I said right. Oh, you're not going to do what I said right now? Now weapons are coming out. Now he's screaming. Now he's angry. Now there's other
police
officers.
Now the officer has escalated it.
You know what I mean? Like,
and, you know, there's, you know, for folks that have traveled internationally, you know, you realize that the police here, almost across the board are bullies. There's a God complex that I have not seen in any other part of the world. The police are absolutely civil servants. You know, if you're, you know, a knucklehead, if you're, you know, acting crazy or something like that, yeah, the police are trained to deal with that. But the ready assumption is not that people are bad. The ready assumption is that people are good, right? It's almost like the police here, it's kind of like guilty until proven innocent, and we're going to treat you accordingly. And overseas, it's actually more like innocent until proven guilty, right? And for all the freedoms that we say we have in this country, those must really only apply to, you know, rich white males who are straight and Christian, because to everybody else, it does not feel like a free country when you come up against that criminal justice system. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, the police in other countries, when you talk to them, it's more of a conversation rather than like, you know, the police here, it's almost like you said, Q, like you're it's almost like you're talking to God, and God has commanded you to, you know, step out of the vehicle, and, you know, they got a, you know, there's a gun on you. And I get that. I get that. You know, having guns at the ready, you know, that can go to your head, and having a, that, iota of tenuous power, it can really, you know, corrupt people. And as across the board, I think that, you know, sort of the platonic ideal, you know, the vision that pops in your head is that there's a white officer when I'm talking about this, but no, officers can come in all colors. This is a policing issue, as we've said since the beginning of this show. However, in this instance, one thing I do need to say is that in theory, a taser would be a non-lethal way of subduing a person who is not being cooperative, right?
Unless you do it for hours.
Yeah, if you do it for a prolonged period of time. And that was what I was going to say. We've seen time and time again that actually these tasers aren't non-lethal. People are dying left and right from being tased by the police. And, you know, again, it's one thing if you like shoot a taser off, you know, somebody drops to the ground, you know, that sort of thing. But if you have five police officers and you still need a taser, then, you know, I'm not sure exactly what's going on here, right? Because the police want to be heroes and tough guys and all that sort of stuff. But none of this makes sense. And it never does in any of these, you know, stories. And we end up with more dead people. And as we've seen that time and again, is that the police will end the lives often enough of Black men with impunity. This is our reality. And, you know, people wonder why we don't have a great relationship with police, why really nobody has great relationships with police unless they are, like I said, those straight, you know, white, you know, Christian males with money and, you know, that sort of thing. There are some exceptions, white, the wives of those men often
the children of those men.
Yeah, they often get a kick out of the police too, but you know, there's a good chunk of us that see this for what it is, and it's basically something that really needs an adjustment. You know, we are not born to die. You know, our lives have value. You can't just kill us and everybody just be okay with that. And it happened over and over again. You know, every time an airplane crashes, they do everything in their power to make sure that an airplane will not crash again. However, every time there's a school shooting, every time the police ends the life of a Black man or, you know, a person, anybody, needlessly, we figure out a way to victim blame, we figure out a way to pass the buck, and then it's just kind of more of the same. And, you know, we're not here to profess that we have any answers. You know, we have a lot of theories that we discuss back and forth on the show, of course, but you know, our job is to kind of point these things out so that you know about them, because, you know, whatever radio station you're listening to us on, it's probably very likely that at no point have they covered this story. And it's probably very likely that since we haven't been talking about all of these unnecessary deaths of Black and brown people in the country at the hands of police in the past 2 or 3 months, that you don't know about them. We get them all in our inbox. We just don't have enough show for the content that we get. You know, we chose this one because it's a little bit more high profile. And, you know, it's about time for us to remind you that this is still very much going on day in and day out. Now, I do want to read a last little bit, just because I want to make sure I'm telling as much of the story as I can. So this is back to Yahoo News. Los Angeles Police Chief Michael Morris said Wednesday that it's unclear what role Anderson's struggle with police played in his death. But we, you know, of course, saw the video and we saw him getting tased. And then, of course, his heart stopped working. So that was pretty clear for us. He said Anderson was in an altered mental state, which is something that we could deduce from watching the video.
Correct.
And claimed that a preliminary blood test showed he had cannabis and cocaine in his system. And again, the emphasis there is that he claimed that the preliminary blood test showed that. Now, from what I understand, I'm not sure that cannabis creates like psycho, whatever effects or whatever that stuff is. I don't know the first thing about, you know, cocaine or any of the rest of that stuff, but I'm pretty sure that it doesn't have that effect on people. So I feel like these sorts of things are things that they throw in the mix to try to, again, make it his fault that he's dead.
Yeah, they have to dehumanize you.
Right.
So that people care less about the fact that you were murdered.
Right. And that feels very unfair. But, you know, Dr. Malina Abdullah, co-founder of Black Lives Matter, Los Angeles, said Wednesday that she believes Anderson's death was the result of police violence, full stop. So I'll read this. Kenan's murder is absolutely horrific, Abdullah said, as The Guardian reported. LAPD is not calling it a killing, but calling it an in-custody death. But Kenan was tased to death. We know LAPD caused Kenan's death. I don't understand why it takes this many guys, you know, leaning on people's necks and, you know, holding limbs and all that sort of stuff to subdue a guy that didn't look all that big. It probably couldn't have been any bigger than me, you know. Certainly not as, you know, didn't have sort of the mass that you have, Q. So I don't know how easily you could take on five, you know, police officers, but that seemed like it'd be a tall order.
I mean, the truth of the matter is I couldn't.
Thanks.
Right. That's what I'm going for. Yeah.
And yet and still he needed to get tased until his heart stopped working. And now he's dead. And we're having to talk about this on the show. So and
again, watching the video, the young man got tased because the officer had already taken his taser out.
That's
why I have my taser out. So I'm going to tase.
Figure out when to use it. Yeah. Stop resisting.
He didn't do anything different. Like he did. There wasn't some big move where he threw somebody off of him or pushed somebody down or anything like that. I have my taser out. So I'm tasing someone.
Well, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. And as promised, we are going to be reading pieces of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail, just to give you an idea of who the man was, what he stood for, and help you when it comes to dealing with his legacy. So I'll read. April 16th, 1963. My dear fellow clergymen, while confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling our present activities unwise and untimely. Seldom, if ever, do I pause to answer criticism of my work and ideas, but since I feel that you are men of genuine goodwill and your criticisms are sincerely set forth, I would like to answer your statement in what I hope will be patient and reasonable terms. In any nonviolent campaign, there are four basic steps. One, collection of the facts to determine whether injustices are alive. Two, negotiation. Three, self-purification. And four, direct action. We have gone through all the steps in Birmingham. Birmingham is probably the most thoroughly segregated city in the United States. Its ugly record of police brutality is known in every section of the country. Its unjust treatment of Negroes in the courts is a notorious reality. There have been more unsolved bombings of Negro homes and churches in Birmingham than in any city in this nation. These are the hard, brutal, and unbelievable facts. On the basis of these conditions, Negro leaders sought to negotiate with the city fathers, but the political leaders consistently refused to engage in good faith negotiations. Then came the opportunity last September to talk with some of the leaders of the economic community. In these negotiating sessions, certain promises were made by the merchants, such as the promise to remove the humiliating racial signs from the stores. On the basis of these promises, Reverend Shuttlesworth and the leaders of the Alabama Christian Movement for Human Rights agreed to call a moratorium on any type of demonstrations. As the weeks and months unfolded, we realized that we were the victims of a broken promise. The signs remained. As in so many experiences in the past, we were confronted with blasted hopes and the dark shadows of a deep disappointment settled upon us. So we had no alternative except that of preparing for direct action, whereby we would present our very bodies as a means of laying our case before the conscience of the local and national community. We were not unmindful of the difficulties involved, so we decided to go through the process of self-purification. We started having workshops on nonviolence and repeatedly asked ourselves the question, are you able to accept the blows without retaliating? Are you able to endure the ordeals of jail? Now, bear this in mind, because you may know someone listening to us today. You may know someone that says, oh, you know, those BLM protesters or all those people, they always want this, but they're just going about it all wrong. Okay. This is directly from Dr. Martin Luther King. Okay. I'll continue. You may well ask, why direct action? Why sit-ins, marches, etc.? Isn't negotiation a better path? You are exactly right in your call for negotiation. Indeed, this is the purpose of direct action. Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and establish such creative tension that a community that has constantly refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. Boom. It's Dr. King's words. My friends, I must say to you that we have not made a single gain in civil rights without legal and nonviolent pressure. History is the long and tragic story of the fact that the privileged groups seldom give up their privileges voluntarily. Individuals may see the moral light and give up their unjust posture, but as Reinhold Niebuhr has reminded us, groups are more immoral than individuals. I guess it's easy for those who have never felt the stinging darts of segregation to say, wait. But when you have seen vicious mobs lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim, when you have seen hate-filled policemen curse, kick, brutalize, and even kill your black brothers and sisters with impunity, boom. When you see the vast majority of your 20 million Negro brothers smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, when you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your six-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park that has just been advertised on television, and see the tears welling up in her little eyes when she is told that Funtown is closed to colored children, and see the depressing clouds of inferiority begin to form in her little mental sky, and see her begin to distort her little personality by unconsciously developing a bitterness toward white people. When you have to concoct an answer for a five-year-old son who's asking in agonizing pathos, Daddy, why do white people treat colored people so mean? When you take a cross-country drive and find it necessary to sleep night after night in the uncomfortable corners of your automobile because no motel will accept you, when you are humiliated day in and day out by nagging signs reading white men and colored, when your first name becomes the N-word, I'll spare you, and your middle name becomes boy, however old you are, and your last name becomes John, when your wife and mother are never given the respected title of Mrs., when you are harried by day and haunted by night by the fact that you are a Negro living constantly at tiptoe stance, never quite knowing what to expect next, and plagued with inner fears and outer resentments, when you are forever fighting a degenerating sense of nobodiness, then you will understand why we find it difficult to wait. Wow. There comes a time when the cup of endurance runs over and men are no longer willing to be plunged into an abyss of injustice where they experience the bleakness of corroding despair. I hope, sirs, you can understand our legitimate and unavoidable impatience. I hope this letter finds you strong in the faith. I also hope that circumstances will soon make it possible for me to meet each of you, not as an integrationist or civil rights leader, but as a fellow clergyman and a Christian brother. Let us all hope that the dark clouds of racial prejudice will soon pass away and the deep fog of misunderstanding will be lifted from our fear-drenched communities, and in some not too distant tomorrow, the radiant stars of love and brotherhood will shine over our great nation with all of their scintillating beauty. Yours for the cause of peace and brotherhood, M.L. King Jr. Now, I do want to say this before you respond. I know we've got a couple seconds. That's not the full letter. I had to edit it down for time, but please read it. Put it up in your room, in your office. Live by it. Go ahead.
I wish the letter could be made into a visual short film, minus the context of it being white racist oppressors versus black people. Make it anyone else versus anyone else. And the person on the receiving side of that
would be empathized for by any audience.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. Once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. Thank you guys for tuning in with us again for another, another one of these very, very difficult journeys through some very, very difficult truths.
Yes, indeed. But, we're still here. We're still standing and we're still doing it for you. We appreciate you allowing us to have these conversations and let's keep it going. So tap in with us. Hit our website, civiccypher.com. And follow us on all social media at Civic Cypher. Download this and any previous episodes.
Subscribe, share, comment,
all that. Donate as well. And submit any questions or any topics that you want us to cover. We do like hearing from you. And, we like having a conversation, not just us talking and you listening. So participate if it makes sense. And until next week, y'all.
Peace.
Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds are spittoon, from sunlight to moon. Busting off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander / beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse and resist. Like this.